over. So I apologize for the virtual folks. But hopefully you can see us now.
Bye. Stand here, are you guys okay with that? Because then I don't have to turn my back here to read the slide. Mm-hmm. I introduce myself. I'm in Billings. Mm-hmm. A little bit about Avis. I think people have actually heard of Avis before. You guys are very well educated. Well, Avis means a lot of things. It also means animal care. So that's the only one person in Montana that deals with that. It's about the humane treatment of large animals, Shamu or Grizzly Bear Center down there, both and that kind of stuff. That's AIDS. Biotechnology, somebody does an genetically engineered crop. We are one of three agencies that regulate that, make sure it doesn't become, you know, a pest. Iowa Crop Protection and Quarantine, PPQ, we'll talk about that as well. Wildlife Services, and they know about Gilly Trappers at Wildlife Services, Feral Swine. I saw the look on Liz's face. Feral Swine look right there. And Vet Services, you know, well, the mouth disease, right? So, high path avian influenza, anybody work with that at all? And many of you know people that did flocks. You've heard about that in the news, right? Our domestic poultry, it's in the wild population of birds too, but high path avian influenza, foot and mouth disease, you know, African swine fever in the Dominican Republic are concerned with that. I mean, Vet Services deal with a lot of those type of issues if you ever want somebody to get people. But I'm just the plant guy, not as exciting as foot and mouth disease. So we have a mission to fully protect American agriculture from things outside of the world and facilitate trade. So a lot of the stuff that we're looking for in the sale, we want to make sure that our agriculture products are still marketable in other parts of the world because of the country. So this is the primary. Just real quick. There's the geraniums. They come in from other parts of the world. They carry a disease sometimes that can affect tomatoes and potatoes. You find them in retail stores. We try to keep them out, but that's the type of stuff. It's into the commerce. We go and we collect it. Asian longhorn beetle, you might see any of these around here. There's something very similar to that one. The white spotted pine sawyer. He's a diet-fed and dying pine trees. This loves maple trees. They do exist in Ohio, South Carolina. Anyway, we don't want those. We look for them. Carnal bunt is a disease weed, which we don't have. We survey for that to make sure that we have those sort of stuff to work people out and get through that weed. But they tend to stay in the news. So we're going to talk about some things that APHIS, the USDA, can do, survey methods and predictions, and then our program is very limited, but we'll talk about that. And I see our one elected official representative left. I don't know if we're still on the line. It'd be nice if they heard some of that stuff. So the three things that Avis does is we serve and provide technical assistance, and occasionally we will provide suppression programming. So everything that Ellen said is true and accurate, and I agree. Anyway, we actually exchanged stuff so that we didn't try to go over this, the same material. I think we didn't duplicate it, but this is important. You know, when you have a butterfly, it starts out as a caterpillar and then goes complete metamorphosis and changes its shape and then comes out as something else. But the grasshopper is incomplete metamorphosis. Comes out of the ground as a little tiny grasshopper and it always looks like a grasshopper all the way up until lays its eggs. Remember, no one did it. Eggs down here. Most of them do go through the winter as an egg. This is important when they get to some of our treatment methodology because the primary pesticide that we use disrupts them going from one life stage to another. It's very specific to grasshoppers. So knowing the life cycle of a grasshopper and their different life stages is important for your potential. And so let's keep that in mind. I heard people talking about taking big ones and little ones. One time of year, they're all going to be this size. And another time of year, they're going to be this size with some exceptions. But That's a timing factor too. This is what the exit bike and coil and some sticky stuff if you want to dig them up. Here's the little tiny first NSTAR. An NSTAR is a life stage. So here's talking NSTARs. Whoever came up with that terminology, I don't know. But a first NSTAR is pretty little, about the size of a grain of rice. So if you're out there and you want to manage grasshoppers, you really got to be looking for them when you have to. Because by the time you want to manage them, and they're flying around, it's probably too late to really be effective with the dimension pool. So start looking early, and we'll talk about some time frames. Still not even a centimeter at their second NSTAR, maybe a centimeter at the third NSTAR. This is the life stage where we like to use the one pesticide we're talking about. Fourth NSTAR, you can start to see their wings here a little bit. You guys on screen can't see me pointing at it. Yeah, yeah, online on the Zoom. Is there a laser on here?
Yeah, there you go.
Is that going to show? That's not going to show up online either, is it?
That should have made the drive.
Anyway, fifth NSTAR, that's just before they're an adult. Their wings are pretty obvious now. They're adults. Here I am pointing again. Well, you guys can see. Most species have the full wing clear out past their abdomen and they start to fly. So if you see a flying grasshopper, that is an adult. If it's flying, it is not an immature grasshopper. Again, the five NSTAR in an adult state, that's consistent. This is the guy you guys don't have to have over the most part of the state of the reservation. It's probably one or two most destructive grasshoppers in the streams. So you look at the numbers. Unfortunately, this is the one that you probably saw by the millions last week. Last week, we got to talk about that. The male and female look pretty similar. Here's one that's a dotsonii grasshopper, and just going over this really quickly because you have to know your grasshopper. See the little tiny wings? For those of you online that are seeing it, that's as big as they're ever going to get on this grasshopper. You might think that they're a nymph, not an adult. Well, if you try to treat them, maybe they get support business and start an evidence of the species, I'm going to do any good with the dinosaur. So you have to know. This is a big Carolina grasshopper. Someone talked about a fly around. They don't care about them. They're not a watch. Don't worry about them. Males and females species, they look alike. So you have to get new species. This is also another one. You want to get into the identification? You talk about that too, about getting into their little sex organs and finding their different species. That's up to you. We can try to touch it, or you can get in. But there is actually a lucid key you put on your phone, so it doesn't have this or that species. So there is some options for you to do some of the stuff. So she said there's about a species out of 400 in the United States, and most of them are not considered pest species, but about a, it says 2 dozen, but in Montana it's about a dozen. So, and a few, I'm talking about snake weed grasshoppers, something they eat snake weed. Somebody likes snake weed, most ranchers don't care about snake weed. They're probably other creatures. This could be on a quiz. Memorize that. Here's the ones that we care about. Here they are, the big pets. Still going to be on this, but not really. Just sorry. So there's different kinds of surveys. Early surveys, you want to look at them when they're little first, second, third, and survey. First start hatching. I'll tell you about the timing. And you think you want them on a year where they're not widespread, because how broad spread that infestation is. It's a win. Lately, it's been everywhere. So that's not been an issue. We always do some tree treatment surveys and then afterwards to make sure that we got some. And then we do an adult survey, which we'll talk about that we didn't buy, hopefully, what's going to happen next year. But the table part of this slide is the yellow is the young grass, they're hatching. The blue is when they're adults and they're laying eggs. So, what can you get from this slide? Don't worry about the species, but there's really not going to be a quiz. But what you can take home from that is that not all species hatch at the same time. Some hatch really early, the Geniopetics. Some hatch really late, the Nebraska girls. We can call it the Kansas girls. This one on the bottom, what does that tell you? It had a really late in the summer and it goes clear through the winter as a grasshopper. We talked about a few of those. So in the spring, when you see those in April and May, and you got half inch grasshoppers, we get calls every year, say, oh my God, they're already big and they're already out. We say, ignore them. Don't even look at those grasshoppers until after Memorial. That's my suggestion. Sometimes a little bit before Memorial Day, that's my suggestion to you is start looking after Memorial. That's when they start. That's when they start. This is a, you know, this is an ARS publication that may or may not be Montana, but you're really not going to get a good idea on this year's grasshopper until really early, late May or June. So if you want to survey, we'll go through this really quick. You just try to figure out how many grasshoppers per square yard. Visualize a square foot, like the Kyle, that's more of a square foot up there, but like in your kitchen. And a square foot, you count how many grasshoppers you follow a square foot, you go through and that number down below, and you repeat that 18 times. Well, that now you have the total number of grasshoppers at 18 square feet, which is equivalent to how many square yards? Math major, Nick? Two, 9 square feet in the yard. Okay. Now you know. So anyway, that'll give you the number of square. That's how we decide, you know, how many departments there. You can use that if you decide. So, Alan said several times, "Grasshopper good, grasshopper bad." The answer is yes. So, do they? Yeah. They can eat about its own weight every day, so that doesn't seem like. But they can also destroy, which means they just clip the vegetation and it also destroys the organic matter. But if you're trying to manage your raised land for productivity, that's not really that's a very especially a problem that it's free. So up to six times its body weight every day, I could destroy it either by eating or cutting it off. So do your treat. Go bring grasshoppers for yard in Wyoming, my colleague, he says they treat down there. In Montana, I think it's higher than that, up in the teens. Working together a few years ago, kind of hippie. Maybe you don't want me to tell that story, but we were attempting to retreat. We decided not to. Right in the 12, 13 per yard, or if we didn't walk away, it show up. Maybe it was the right decision. But is there grass to save? So who's here in this county in 2020? And was there, what happened? You, what happened?
Well, bad grasshoppers, and then it's starting to get dry.
So in June, so we had a big program set up a treat here in 2021, a couple 100,000 acres, I don't remember. Pretty good. In June, there was several sequential days of 100 plus degree weather, which is not what happens in June in Montana, and it killed the growth on all the grasshoppers. It just stopped the growth and it burned it down, and 90% of people don't want to participate in the program. This, there's nothing for us to say about it. You know, we're hoping that we'd have something to protect. And they said, never mind. So we just, you know, we walked away. We had 5 planes. We did a little bit of treatment. Yeah. We had 30 something dollars, something like that. But, we didn't do very much. But that's it. You know, is there something for you to save? Is it worth it? You want to just buy hay? You want to take that money and go buy hay? And it's dead. I mean, half of the herd in Phillips County was liquidated after that year, right? That's not a small thing, or you want to just wait it out. Well, we've been waiting for the tide to turn in Montana here now for since 2019. And I haven't yet. You can wait so long. But anyway, those are the things you have to consider. Here's some stuff over by Sydney on what is that canola? Anybody has that canola? Got some lots of grasshoppers there, sagebrush. I mean, they can get really bad. The point is the grasshoppers can get to the point where it might affect whatever your management objectives are, whether it's toads or grazing grasshoppers, you know, or grazing cattle. So they can be allowed. So I thought the title would be available for us. Also brought what people are using that we know. I heard from Graham, look at what this does. Put that right there. You can look at this. We're pretty responsible compared to what they are. So one thing, nothing. If you're going to joke about that, We spray air. Or we use something called reduced agent area treatments, which we use exclusively for all our herbicide programs. A lot of that means we keep the label, I'll explain what that is, but we use the same amount of pesticide, but we don't spray it over every inch of area. So why wouldn't we do anything? Well, one thing, we don't do anything. I want this to be perfectly clear. We don't do anything unless we are asked to go do that. So people think that we're restraining the world. That's not the way it is. So we're not asked to get involved. If there's not enough grasshoppers, we're not going to get involved. We made that decision. We make that decision all the time. People want us to treat and we walk away and say, no, we're pregnant to do it. There might be too much water, environmental factors. That was a challenge many years on the Fort Belknap preservation. Threatened endangered species have not been a significant factor in Montana to date, although there's some things in the air that could affect that. And that bottom one down there, we don't know any good money. So in 2022, we had no money. 2021, we did a significant amount of acres. And in 2023, I had a lot of people call here because whoever had their ducks in a row first got our attention. And after that, we just have to say no. So we'll explain on that. So we have four pesticides that we use, not that one, Malbion and Carbaryl. And I'll talk about the advantages and disadvantages of all these. Everything that we do right now is diphenbenzene, except in a little bit of ground bait, quite a bit. And this new one, chlorantraniliprole, and there's going to be a quiz on that. You know? So, it's a major brand name for that. And they have no much about it. It was assessed at 3 yards. So, they used in recent years. It's only got 3 dangerous in birds. But it's mode of action. It's a cholinesterase. Cholinesterase is the enzyme that makes nerve transmission growth. Based on the rate of dose, good effects. We use 8 ounces, but it's not very much. And it could be effective by temperature and conditions available. We haven't used that pesticide since the 80s. So it's been long. Same thing. Residual is a little bit. You know, they keep hatching, you kind of want it to stay out for a while. Just goes away, then they'll be good. Same with they mostly have tested that it can be touched. It's also available and it can be put in a bait and liquid patient. We talked a little bit about the allergy of the babies who are use a little bit of the bait. Well, anyway, there's a couple different kinds of bait. But it's kind of expensive. $2 a pound is $10. Make her treatment. Sorry, I'm going to get something that's about to be conscious because it's a bait and something has to eat it, it gets constipated. Diphenbendron. This is our like our silver bullet and grasshopper movement started in about the early 2000s. That was a pretty long residual, so action it does stay out for say the weeks, but it's most action is a chitin. Some life stage and then they go from one life stage to another, they shed their exoskeleton and then they get bigger and then they harden up again. Well, that stuff that makes them hard is chitin. You don't have chitin, I don't have chitin, birds don't have chitin, cows don't have only arthropods with an exoskeleton have chitin. So, the only thing that would be affected by that things with an exoskeleton, and then they have to eat it. And we stay a long ways away from the bottom. So things like crawdads, crayfish, however you want to say that, aquatic dragonflies, you know, stay away from water. So it's very specific, but it has to be used when the grasshopper before the grasshopper is adult, they're not going to shed their exoskeleton anymore. You just so the timing's really critical. We feel like it's the most environmentally conscious. You know, if you're going to use pesticide, you know, this is pretty environmentally conscious. So that's we have an environmental impact statement you can read. But here's a take home: it has to be used when the grasshopper is vertical, usually about that third instar, and there's still weight subsequent hatches to come. So it's a matter of Right. Decisions. And you announce that. No one told.
Yeah.
All right. See, I feel like the offering is just a beautiful. We're in front of all. I'm saying. I just balance it. So. But its mode, yes, its mode of action is anthracnidic diamine. So it really is sickening. So it's pretty safe. It does work on adults. It's not, so that's a plus. If we were, but we, it hasn't been used in any large scale programs. We don't know much of cost, we know, but even the cool. And the biggest inhibiting factor is that when you spray with planes, it takes a lot of water. And when the plane's in the air, you know, they're making money. When it's sitting on the ground reloading, they're not. So the cost of application is going to go up that to keep, you know, coming back there, loading a lot of water. So that's a challenge. We have not used it. So, a lot of people control something. People familiar with biological control and what that is. Biological control is taking an invasive organism, finding its natural enemies in another part of the world, and introducing it to try to control grasshopper to native. Everything that's native to it is already here. We're not going to go to another part of the world and bring in some non-indigenous thing that's grasshopper that could crush our full ecosystem. So biocontrol is it's not the plan. Our goal is to try to suppress grasshoppers. They're an important part of the ecosystem. We're trying to get them out of the way. You know, now, whatever. So there is no same old custody, if I hear that. It's something that can be formulated with brand. That's a protozoan, I believe. That's native, natural in the environment. They actually sell a brand that has that formulated in it. And people are variable on whether it works or not. Our experience from a native standpoint is that it does not suppress large scale populations. And so we don't consider it. We did a bunch of stuff with BLM and Petroleum County back in probably the 90s. People can use it around their yard or be safe, but we're not. So you might get 50% of the population that does. So that's not considered part of the risk. So I would suggest probably this is more of an environmental group than let's kill all the grasshopper groups. But there's no air on records. So we have a lot of times I ask local people, if you don't want to use what we use, they just assess to be safe, you know, ask your local contractor what they want to use. A lot of times it's this, you guys look at the label and see what it does. But that's what we have available to us. So here's the rates. I'm just going to go through it. It's in your handout. If anybody wants tree grasshoppers, you can see what the rates are. We used to do this kind of stuff with great big planes back when I started in the 80s. We don't do that anymore. We have a lot of smaller planes. We have a good navigation system to shut off our water in sensitive sites. And again, dipolin is kind of new. It's newer. And we use the reduced agent area treatment. So now we can use these little turbid thrushes or even ag cattle, smaller ones that can be a lot more precise. Don't try to avoid all water, like I said. And anything else that's sensitive site will help out a little bit. The safe trails, you can speak to that. But BLM is considering not allowing dipolin on any safe house. I have a chance that I will get myself. If you want to submit that to BLM decision. So the reduced agent area treatments. I mean, we even though we use this environmentally friendly pesticide, we actually only treat half the area. You spray weeds, you want to get every weed with a drop of pesticide, right? But grasshoppers are mobile. They're bouncing around. We don't want to get them all. We just want to get a lot. So we rely on the grasshoppers moving back and forth in between treated and untreated swaths to try to get into where they can eat, a little bit of the nitrogen on. and it'll slowly suppress that population. And birds of predators still continually feed on them for the whole time. Some of those other pesticides that have the nerve inhibitors, you know, I think our studies, if you can look at it in the EIS, they indicate, I think they just studied with hornbarks, not in certain species, the solid species, but in wildlife carnival. Anyway, the rats process is what we use exclusively. We don't do anything other than this is what it would look like. The arches are where, you know, the plane is applying pesticide. This is what we do. We leave untreated stuff right in the middle. Here's another one. Treat one squad, skip one, drink one, skip one, and rely on grasshoppers moving around in there. So the skip distance is completely related to the residual of the pesticide. So if you've got malaria, it's only going to be out there 3 to 5 days. You can't leave a big area untreated because they only have 3 days to get there. They got 3 or 4 weeks to get there. Skip. So it's all dependent on that. Okay. The 80% coverage for malaria is possible. So here's the reduced rates. If you want to just save a lot of money and even reduce the amount of pesticides without reduce the rates, here it's all in your handout. We stick with the 1 ounce amount of dimethyldron per acre would be used to reduce the regular SWAT. You could use ATV, same thing, spray a little bit, skip 100 feet, spray a little bit. You know, if you want to clean around your crops or around something, try to save it. Brand bait, we were talking about that. But you might have some cedars, early bird cedars. You can apply the bait with the equipment you already have. We have these big blowers that you can get out of the Peacock Industries that I can't, what was I said, a brand that you can. You get these blowers that blow it out there. There's a couple different types of brand. These pellets made out of apple pumice, rolled wheat. If you try to use one of those blowers with these pellets, it just makes dust out of it. So you want to match your type of brand that you have. Is anybody familiar with Mormon crickets? I think the Little Rockies has Mormon crickets. Where did you see them?
Oh, I did my master's in Owyhee County in southwestern Idaho.
Tons
of Mormon crickets.
Didn't you mean out there? They're getting trampled. Where did you see them?
Well, at home on the ranch.
Have you seen them, Mormon?
Yeah. Not like massive, but yeah. Yeah, just how small this world is. There's just like a little place, just the summer's a bit more cricket. So, anyway, but that's all today. These guys believe this brand because they crawl around the ground. They're not born. So, but have you seen them? Have you seen them in Nevada and in Utah? What'd you say?
It's a king.
It is a king. You can tell us all. But that's a great tool. It's a great tool. So that's where that ends. You can look this up on the ARS website. Rat acceptors, you might get half of it. And you see these two important ones that we talked about here. You might get it. 50 to 70%, and if that's enough for your management objectives and use it, but you got to know what species grasshopper you have. All these species here, you might get 30 less than apple, and these other species, you're just adding organic matter to the ground to try to control these guys. So you got to know what species of grasshopper. That's my take-home message to this. So we have a program. We do surveys. We provide technical assistance, which I'm doing today. And if we have funding and you request it and it meets all the objectives, we can do some treatment programs. Funding is a big deal. We have not been well funded. I talked about all those. So I'll also talk about the cyclic nature of the grasshopper in Montana. You can see the more red there was years that they were worse. So there's periods where they're just in the too bad. And I didn't go past 2021 because the guy doing this project doing a different job, but I'll talk about that a little bit. So I'm going to show you an individual. So this is what we predicted was going to happen in 2018. So this is, we do an adult survey in the fall, the previous summer, late summer, July and August. And then from that, we create the next year's, what we call hazard map predictions. We didn't predict there to be too many. The red areas are where we expect there to be problems, or orange potential problems. So we didn't expect too much to happen in 18. So in 18, in late summer, we surveyed again, predict what was going to happen in 19. And so that was the prediction of 2019. So who was here in 2019 that remembers what happened here? Very similar to this year. What happened?
Wow. Just an explosion of grasshoppers.
Yeah. What happened weather-wise early on?
Well, it was really wet in June.
It was really wet early.
Yes.
And what color were the hillsides? I know. Yeah. Who was from Flowing Wells? Where's the guy that was here, Elon?
Yeah.
Sorry about the yellow.
Yellow. And your neck. Yellow. That sweet blower exploded. So in 2019, it rained and rained in the spring. Sweet clover exploded, and then Mother Nature shut that spigot off. And the grasshoppers hatched about 2 weeks too late. All lived, lots of food, and were dry. And 2019 was the beginning of this cycle of fires. That was the beginning. So, and this one, this was, I can't read that. So we were predicting this to be what was going to happen in 2019. So what really happened was you start to see more color in there, right? So in 2019, we thought there are a lot of grasshoppers here. I bet there's going to be a bunch in 2020. And there was. And then Marco Manukian, you know Marco, he said many times on camera, sorry, if you guys are here, he said, APA said it was going to happen. He said it happened. So sometimes we get it right. Sometimes we don't get it right. So this is 2020. This is what did happen, predicting 2021. A little bit different, but the whole state, the orange means are still over 8 per yard. That still means there's a lot. And then this is what we predicted was going to happen this year. And we don't have this map yet or predicted for next year, but this is our July, August map. It doesn't look very good. This is the point map. It looks like we still have a lot of grasshoppers. I don't know where Custer County screwed, but they're about years into this. You know, at some point they're gonna go, wait, I wish we had been, I wish we had a silver.
No, first of all.
A silver ball? Silver ball. You can't see what's silver. No, I don't. I keep thinking it's gonna be next year. Hopeful, but that this isn't saying that. So this is your area, this meeting here. Anything with yellow, a little different color scheme, that's still 8 or above, it's yellow. And red is 15 or above. So anyway, there's a lot of risk. You guys already know, that's why we're talking. So, why is APHIS even involved in it? The Plant Protection Act says, you read the Plant Protection Act, it talks all about all these invasive species and how we manage trade to try to prevent them, manage them, and everything like that. The only organism that's in there that they mention specifically is grasshoppers. And that's because back in the Dust Bowl areas, everybody was getting wiped out. I don't know if you've seen any of the old pictures of the guy walking around with the flowers with arsenic on the ground. And it was doing no good to scare me. That's I said, well, maybe the government has a role to help coordinate more than one part or scale for the reinfestation of these grandiose sites. That's why we do. Everyone has the ability to do the work in their own. The USDA is charged with it because of the Plant Protection Act, and we have MOUs with BLM forests. Responsibility to the tribes. So like 4 million isn't here. I've seen that they should be, just for the record, when they're private. But anyway, that's why we did. We have a couple different programs. I don't know what kind you wanted me to be done, but I'm almost done, I think. We have a program where if there's private land and there's federal land adjacent to it, and you as a private individual do anything you can to keep the government grasshoppers keep coming, there is a program by which that federal land hunting agency. And they asked us, you know, do a little half or quarter month surprising to keep it from moving null or something. There is a program. We haven't done it all along, but asked and it's more expensive and it's hard to manage, but it does exist. It's like how that could happen. But the thing that we do get involved in is these larger blocks where there's multiple parties involved, 10,000 acres or more. It's a range land program. It's not, so we're all range land people here for the most part. Not a crop program. You can include some crop if it's on the label of the trust side just to keep it ambiguous, but it's considered a range land program. I figure people that are raising crops and some would laugh at that, you know, are making enough money off that crop, they should be able to make some tests in that crop. But so it's really a range land program only for federal and trust land. We have historically picked up the dime for that. State land, DNRC has been pretty good about saying, hey, let's go ahead and treat any state land where the lessee is requesting that action, but they pay the state share. The state's not going to pay it. So it's, historically, the DNRC has said, go ahead and treat any state land that the cost share with the lessee. And then private land will pay a third. It was set up. The Plant Protection Act was set up so that the state pay a third, we pay a third, the private party pay a third. Montana doesn't participate, so two-thirds go back to the private party. So that's how that works. I'm not going to get into the details. If anybody actually wants treatments, we need to have a different meeting, but there's a lot of work that goes into it in the winter. If you do it at the last second, we're almost screwed. Because it's hard to pull it together at the last second. We don't do anything unless we're asked. There's proper agreement saying you're going to pay us back. You don't necessarily have to have funds in the account anymore unless you have one person speaking for a group. You got to get all the maps in place, sensitive sites identified, farming concerns identified, you know, places we're not going to treat. So we really want to plan early and then we'll contract with somebody. And it takes a little bit, but it says one of the we can generally have a plane in the underground in a week, but you know. When you work with the government, you have to be fair to everybody. We can't just go hire somebody. We have to send it out to the world. Everybody has to bid on it. There's like a process for that. So the early planning is huge. I'm just going to say there's a lot. You can read that. There's a lot of reasons why the cost is different. Everything's going up. In the past, we've had the cost share around the $2 mark, but the program this year is $2.59, I think, three. So. But there's a lot of reasons, and it's all contingent upon how much that those contractors are going to bid on program. So we do all NEPA. We talked about the new, we used to do annual environmental assessment. Montana is the last APHIS state actually that didn't do 5-year EA. Most other states around us have already done that. Our first 5-year plan. And BLM indicated they adopted. You know, through their NEPA process or NEPA, our environmental assessments. We do consult with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the endangered species. And the only thing that is potentially going to impact us is the northern long-eared bat that lives at the confluence of the Missouri and the Yellowstone State of the river. So that really we do environmental monitoring. We examples out of the water. We think there's an issue. We put dikes down along sensitive sites, beehives, water, whatever it is. We hit these parts. And we'll just make sure that we're doing a good job with the project. So you can decide if you do it or not. We're here to sell the program, especially when we really have funding. But indeed, this is a year off to get it. So, if people are interested in being able to need to know some estimated figures earlier than later, yeah, local contractors talk to them. But just decide if you want to have another meeting. I understand there's now an extension agent here. A lot of times we rely on the extension agent to try to coordinate those parties. Again, we're not going to treat anywhere where people don't want to treat. I think the Prairie Reserve says no. And That's good. I don't want to do this. This is really hard on me, by the way. I'll show you my staff. This is Western Montana. All that yellow is grasshoppers. And that's what they did. They ate that hay field to dirt. So this is what a lot of people don't want to happen. So this is 100% of my staff. And there's five of us. And we have other stuff to do besides grasshoppers. So if you want grasshopper suppression, you got to talk to us. You got to be part of the cooperative process. Early. I got two people.